Previously on X-Men.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Cave of Solitude, your pop culture and comic book podcast, coming to you from the megacity metropolis of Toronto. I am your host, Eric Anthony, and you are tuned in for another episode of The Road Report, where I attempt to make my way to work safely on my long commute in the morning on the mean streets of Toronto and the greater Toronto area, as I talk to you about comic books, movies, whatever may come to my mind at this moment in time. So for this episode, I think we're on episode 178. I'm losing count now, but on this episode, we are going to continue our chit-chat of revisiting, or for me, visiting X-Men stories for the very first time. Now, if this is your first episode tuning in, I've been doing this because it all started by me reading Fabian Nicieza's Deadpool and Cable, and I jumped through a rabbit hole that took me to all these different parts of the X-Men universe, which I have been enjoying thoroughly as a form of nostalgia, but also reading some of these stories for the first time and really getting a good taste of X-Men lore and just classic old school X-Men, for better or for worse at times. So for this episode, we are going to revisit X-Men just after the Fall of the Mutants, which was our last episode. So for some context, before I begin to talk about the next couple of issues that I read, which were leading into Inferno. So I don't know how far I'm going to get into what I've read recently, but I'll do my best to keep it short and succinct if I can, without boring you to death. For some context, where we last leave the X-Men, it's important to note that the X-Men are presumed dead by the rest of the world. They have defeated the adversary. There's been two storylines that fall into play, or more than two, but there's been two storylines mainly that we think of in Fall of the Mutants, and that's the one referring to the X-Factor battling Apocalypse, but also in the Uncanny X-Men books, which deal with the main X-Men team at the time. They're all presumed dead. They defeat the adversary at Forge's lair in Dallas, Texas, at his office building, I guess you could say it is. And they sacrifice themselves in order to close the portal that the adversary was trying to open. In doing so, the goddess Roma, who is the main protagonist against the adversary himself, they are each other's main enemies, or conflict between the two of them, she resurrects the X-Men. And in the process of resurrecting the X-Men, I don't know if she grants them, I don't remember, but the X-Men are still going to be incognito and presumed dead by the rest of the world. And so much so that they can't be captured on camera if someone takes a photo of them. They can't be captured on video camera if they're being recorded on TV, live stream, or whatever the case may be. But even if they are surveilled through some sort of MRI, some sort of... what's the word here? I'm thinking of what you walk through when you go through like a baseball game. Security, any type of security system, you can't scan the X-Men. They're still presumed dead. And this little plot device comes in handy for the next couple of years, I would say. I know that there were portions of X-Men publishing where it was twice a month because of the summer. That happened a lot with Marvel Comics back in these days and still to this day. But there are quite a number of issues where this factor of the X-Men being presumed dead and unable to be seen or monitored or be recorded comes into play. So that's kind of important to note as we go forward. So where we find ourselves now, well, where I find myself now in reading, I'm now in issues 235 to 238. There's a portion from 228 to 234 that isn't collected. I'm not going to buy those single issues digitally. I'm just not interested. So I'm reading these big events. The next one that is collected is the Extinction Agenda. Now, the Extinction Agenda, of course, takes place way down the line in issues 270, in the 270s somewhere. I think 270 to 272, if memory serves. And, of course, some issues of New Mutants and X-Factor. But this particular trade opens up with four issues that introduce the island, or the country of Genosha, for the very first time. And this is a very important part of X-Men lore, this story, I feel, is actually, I actually enjoyed it better than the Extinction Agenda event, which was good and it was fun. But this story, which I didn't have any interest to read when I first popped open this trade, interested me more than what I would end up reading as the big event, which was nice and pretty to look at and all of that, because the artists were in their prime doing X-Men and New Mutants for the first time, which were Rob Liefeld and Jim Lee, as well as John Bogdanov, which was all fine and dandy. But this story, I felt, was really, really good. I think it's called A Green and Peaceful Land. I could be mistaken. Keep in mind, I'm driving in my car, so I can't make proper reference. And editors know, last episode, just to give you an example, I called the Mutant Massacre the Mutant Marauders event, which is incorrect. It's the Mutant Massacre. So I caught that. I apologize for any confusion. But in these particular issues, A Green and Peaceful Land, which have the X-Men encounter Genosha for the first time, it's written by Chris Claremont, drawn by Mark Silvestri and Rick Leonardi, respectively. Very good story. Genosha is, or was, it still is, if it's referenced in the comics, I'm not even sure how much it's being used now. But it does have a very storied history as you continue to read X-Men lore. But it was an allegory for South Africa at the time, and a metaphor for apartheid. And it was very, it still is, in a lot of ways, a very timely topic to discuss in regards to this country, Genosha. It's a sovereign state that takes any child or any person that has the mutant gene, whether it's been developed to the point where they have powers, or if they've been, you know, they've been born and the mutant X gene is found in them. It is decided by the government that they are going to be genetically modified and turned into products of the state to serve the state, to lose their free will completely, because they are not really, they are defective, but they are useful. So in order to serve their purpose and their country to its fullest, to their fullest potential, and for the betterment of Genosha, they are genetically modified to serve as, I forgot the word that is used towards them. It's something mutant-esque, I forget. But they are genetically modified to be laborers, but to operate in very specific areas of the labor force that may be missing or may need a little boost in the economy. And, of course, their mutant powers lend themselves very well to that. But they lose all free will, all ability to really think for themselves. They are put in these suits that are bonded to their bodies. They look like, I guess you could say, a stereotypical superhero outfit to some extent, but they are all androgynous. They all have the same sort of suit. They're all shaved bald. You can't tell really who's male, female anymore. And they are given a number. They're not even given a code name. They're just given numbers. And the island of Genosha, it's absolute in their decision making. There is no emigration that is available to them. So if any of these people who have the mutant gene try to leave, the forces of Genosha, the magistrates, or what they call the press gang, there's a lot of information when it comes to these books, man. The press gang are these groups of people who go out and hunt these people who've tried to leave, who've tried to escape being turned into products of the state. So the story begins with this man who's running away with his baby, trying to escape Genosha. So you know that there's something up, there's something sinister taking place, or somebody trying to run away. You don't know if they're in trouble for something or what the case may be. But the main story involves a character named Jenny Ransom. That's the name. I'm thinking of all the people involved in this, and Jenny Ransom is the main character that the magistrates are after. And she is being piloted by X-Men associate, wife of Cyclops, or estranged wife of Cyclops, Madeline Pryor, who is about to be a major character, major character in the stories that follow this and in the event known as Inferno, which will most likely be up next in the Road Report. So they are, she's got the mutant gene, and they're hunting her in order to turn her into a mutate. I think that's the correct term for what Genosha does to their citizens who have the mutant X gene. She is also, Jenny Ransom, is also the girlfriend of Philip Moreau. And Philip Moreau is the son of one of the main officiates, I think that would be the appropriate term, of Genosha, who is the leading engineer that turns people into these mutates. His father is Dr. David Moreau. So there's definitely a conflict of interest here because Philip is in love with this. It's a forbidden love. And the one that he loves is being hunted by his father and the press gang, wanting to turn his girlfriend into this mutate who, for all intents and purposes, their life will be muted. They will no longer be who they are. They will no longer have any personality. The person that you once knew and loved will be gone. In fact, they shouldn't even exist at this point in time. So it's very strong, emotionally charged storyline that gets you invested quite quickly. Of course, Madeline Pryor and Jenny Ransom are captured. The X-Men are sent a message from Madeline Pryor that she is in trouble. So Wolverine and Rogue go into Genosha. Sorry guys, I'm driving. I'm just trying to keep all of my thoughts processed and stay safe. Wolverine and Rogue enter Genosha. As they enter Genosha, they encounter some of the mutants who work for the Genoshian government, who are on board with this thing that they've got going on, turning people into the mutates. And one of them, he has a code name. His name is Wipeout, and his power is essentially to take out mutant powers. So he leaves Wolverine and Rogue powerless, captured. And here's where the adventure ensues. So one of the things that you need to know about Rogue at this time, we all know that her little touch power, when she touches somebody, it absorbs their power for a certain amount of time, leaving that other person sick, almost deathly sick. But somewhere in the past, Rogue had encountered Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers, absorbed her powers to the point where they've stuck permanently. But not only that, she's also absorbed a portion of Carol Danvers' memory and personality. And in this particular story, Carol Danvers takes over Rogue's psyche in order to help Wolverine and her escape. It's quite a good story. I really enjoyed it. And the rest of the X-Men, of course, come to the rescue and have a part to play in getting Jenny Ransom out of there, getting Madeline Pryor back, as well as rescuing Wolverine and Rogue. Now, it seems like a quite simple story, a simple four-issue parter, but there's a lot of things that are now chess pieces that are put onto the board. There are a lot of things that take place in this story that let you, that inform you of what's going to be happening next, especially with Madeline Pryor as she is captured. She's having certain visions and part of her personality are coming out to see that there's way more up with this girl than we've been led to believe. She's made a deal with what I would say basically a demon to forward the plot that she has in her mind of what her end game is going to be, especially when it comes to the Marauders. See, they're coming back again. The mutant Marauders are coming back into play in this. So there's a lot of plot points of revenge that are going to be brought up later on in the X-Men storyline, that the seeds for them are planted here while people are captured in this basically a concentration camp that is holding and misusing life. The interesting part of this, and as a kid I would imagine growing up when South Africa and the issue of apartheid is happening in South Africa during the late 80s, it was a pressing issue. And as a child reading these books and seeing some of your favorite characters or seeing children being turned into these things, these mindless things that serve a purpose, would have been a great object lesson, I would say, to try to understand people's rights, people's dignities, understanding people's differences in life, and how sometimes we can be raised with a mentality to look at people that are different from us or that we consider a threat in a way that we want to control them, we want to shut them down, we want to only see them be used for our benefits. And the minute that they would become fully grown individuals that may excel or may be considered a threat to our freedoms or our comfort zones, we couldn't handle that. And I mean, it goes back to some of the philosophies in this book. Are, you know, the Nazis are often referenced as well. The Genosian government, are they basically doing what the Nazis were trying to do back in World War II? And in their mind, of course, they're not. And what's interesting about the way that this book is written and presented is that those citizens of that country who are, you know, fully fledged believers of what their government does, because the country of Genosha is a thriving, peaceful country. It is an economically strong country. And in order for it to stay that way, they need to keep this process that they have going on in motion. It cannot be disturbed by anybody. And it becomes, you know, in their mind, they are a shining beacon to the world of what can be if they learn how to legislate people properly. So I found it very interesting. I wasn't expecting to enjoy these four issues as much as I did. It did get me excited for the next couple of stories that were going to be coming up. But it also made use of, like I said before, that plot device of the X-Men basically being presumed dead to the rest of the world. How that comes into play story-wise in the next couple of years. So that's my little rant on what I think is called the Green and Pleasant Land, the first appearance of the island of Genosha. Dr. Philip Moreau is introduced. You've got Madeline Pryor, Jenny Ransom, featured in this storyline as two of the main characters. Wolverine and Rogue. Carol Danvers takes over Rogue's psyche, and Wolverine and Rogue in the Carol Danvers mindset, I guess you could say, have to escape this island without their powers. And Wolverine, of course, being without his healing powers, is quite beaten up and on the verge of death. So the stakes are quite high. And again, some of these things that take place in this story happen again and again later on as you read X-Men lore and X-Men comics. But if you kind of go back and look at it from, this is the first time these things have happened, this is the first time Genosha is introduced, and what a powerful way it is done. So that's my rant for the X-Men issues 235 to 238. Thank you for listening. I hope you guys go out and pick up some of these books and enjoy them as much as I have. Or if you don't like them and you think I'm crazy, email me, talk to me about them. Tell me what you think. Tell me why you think the whole concept of Genosha is silly. Because it does become a whole bunch of different things as time goes on. So the next Road Report should be rather soon, I hope. I do read these books and then kind of forget what I've read because I move on to the next thing so quickly. So I have to calibrate my thoughts in order to summarize them as best as I possibly can without it being confusing, but also making it interesting enough that you want to listen to this and possibly go reread or read these books for the first time. So you can leave us a review at iTunes, follow us on Facebook, you can follow us on Instagram, you can leave us an email at caveofsolitude@outlook.com, and stay tuned for more episodes of the Cave of Solitude and Road Report. This is Eric Anthony signing off. Take care, and we will speak to you soon.